You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, and we are pleased to be joined right now by Scott Petrick of the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. How you doing, my man?
I'm good.
So, first of all, let's put in perspective where this team is. With five games left and seeing what you've seen the last 2 weeks, I just want to hear from you your thoughts on this question of whether or not they've regressed, whether you have new concerns that maybe you didn't have before.
Yeah, you know what? I bought in when they beat the Ravens. You know, I thought they had a chance to make a run. I thought Cincinnati and Pittsburgh were both beatable. So I think it's disappointing that they were not able to win at least one of those two. And then you start to get the feeling, oh my gosh, we're going to a December that we're going to play irrelevant games and meaningless. And I can see why fans and even the players are frustrated. I think it just exposed the fact that if you don't get really good quarterback play, it's hard to win. And if you don't make enough plays on either side of the ball, you're not going to be a team that consistently wins. And that's what we saw. Pittsburgh made plays. Cincinnati made plays. The Browns just didn't make enough plays those 2 weeks.
And I think people could, you know, tell me that they think that I'm nuts, but I still don't come out of those games thinking Pittsburgh or Cincinnati were unbeatable by any stretch of the imagination. The Browns, you can't turn the ball over four times. You need to execute in the biggest of moments, and that's what this Browns team failed to do in those games, as you just pointed out.
No, you're right. In the Cincinnati game, you know, I had the same doubts about Andy Dalton before the game that I do now. You know, they had that fluky second quarter where they made all the big plays. Now, Pittsburgh just reinforced to me how good Big Ben is. And if you have that guy on your team, you're always going to have a chance to win games and go to the playoffs. To me, he dominated that game. And then on the other side of the ball, Troy Polamalu has enough left in him to make a couple big plays that turn the game. And on the other side of the ball, the Browns defense, you know, they played, their numbers have been good, but they're unable to get those one or two turnovers that turn the game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that was really it. And Troy Polamalu, to his credit, got AFC Defensive Player of the Week for that performance. So it was a strong game for him. How much of that was the Browns' fault for allowing him to have that strong game? Whatever. But he did go out and played at the level that you've seen a younger Troy Polamalu play. But when we look at, I think, some of the problems on this football team, and it keeps coming back to offense, and I guess it's the continual reminder that there aren't enough playmakers there. And I'm worried now that maybe the playmaker we thought we would have seen in Jordan Cameron isn't maybe the guy that we think he is, or how much further he has to go to get back to being that guy that he was. I mean, teams have effectively just taken him right away, and it's on him, it's on the coaches to deal with that, but so far the dealing with it hasn't been so good.
No, you're right. And, you know, for one, when it happens one game, you say, okay, well, the Ravens concentrated on, we're not going to let him beat you. But when it happens three games in a row, you start to think, okay, well, the coaches have to do a better job of getting him the ball. And to me, maybe that means more passes down the seam. We see a lot of the outs. You know, he's made a lot of catches on outs and a lot of catches on those long digs where it takes him a long time to go across the field. You know, maybe we can get him down the seam. And I think he can be effective that way because he's athletic and can go up and get the ball. But you also need Jordan Cameron to do that. And then when he gets the chances, even if they're limited, he's got to take advantage. And he dropped the big third down when Whedon came in the game and threw it to him, and he wasn't able to hang onto the ball in the end zone. So I do need to see more out of him. I would also pass some of the blame to the Greg Littles and the Devon Basses in the running game, because if those guys aren't a threat, then I think defenses obviously can focus on Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron and try to take them away. So I think you can spread the blame. You know, I've still been impressed with what Jordan Cameron's done, but you'd like to see the stats stay up from week to week.
And you talk about Jordan Cameron. To become a consistent, effective tight end in the league, though, you've got to be able to hit those quick short hitches where you sit down in the middle of a zone, you're squared up with the quarterback, and catch the ball. And that seems to be the catch that he has the toughest time with, which in many cases you would think would be the easiest of all the catches he's asked to make.
No, and that's a good point. And he doesn't have maybe the typical body of an Antonio Gates or Tony Gonzalez where you can really get big, and no matter who the defender is, they can't come over the top of you and knock it away. And Jordan just doesn't have that body type, and I don't know if he has that physical presence. So that's why you see him more when most of his catches are when he's a moving target, because he's running away from the slower linebackers or he's bigger than the safeties, but he doesn't box up a whole lot. And that was, you know, those were the doubts I had about him in training camp, whether or not he's has enough durability and he's tough enough in traffic.
Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram covers the Browns, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So another game with Brandon Whedon as the starting quarterback. at this point, Scott, the questions are more about does he have any confidence left, a guy who has been so maligned, a guy who has struggled so much, but a guy who more than anything else just hears how bad he is, if he's even I don't know how he cannot hear some of that's being said publicly, mostly fans, and then hearing the booing that takes place in the stadium. Where do you think his head is? And I know you've followed this guy pretty closely, as we all do, but I know in particular you've kind of studied his game and broken it down. What kind of Brandon Whedon is there now for this team to take through, presumably, the if it's not the rest of the season, it's certainly probably more than one game?
Yeah, I might be the only guy in Cleveland that isn't upset about having to see him play again, just because I think he does have a chance to get better. But, we just talked to him, and I've been impressed the whole time at how he's handled, you know, everything, all the adversity. The fans have every right to boo, but it's got to be hard for a guy when he comes on the field, hasn't thrown a pass yet, and he's booed. But I think he's handled it well. I like everything he said to the media from the time he was first replaced by Hoyer and then replaced by Campbell. You know, he said, I'm just going to keep working to be ready. I know I can play at any time. And I know those are pat answers, but I believe he's taken that to heart and that he has been ready. He didn't look shell-shocked when he came in against the Steelers. I know the numbers weren't great and he had a couple turnovers, but he didn't look out of place to me. He looked like Brandon Whedon looks. And I don't know if that's great or not, but I just like the attitude that he's had. And, you know, I think he's handled even with the boos. You know, he said he's tuning them out. He's not taking shots at the fans. He knows that if he plays well, the opinions will change and the boos will stop. So I have been impressed with him off the field. You know, now the question is, can he develop some accuracy? You know, I just noticed his completion percentage, again, it's 51.5, which obviously isn't close to being what you need it to be. So that's what you need to see. You need to see him complete some more passes and, you know, try to score some points and win a game. I mean, the guy's 0-4 to start this year. And I know it would mean a lot to him to win a game and get a little bit of momentum, because it's only his second year in the league. And I know everybody's given up on him, but he hasn't given up on himself.
Alex Tanny signed off the practice squad of the Dallas Cowboys here today for his first practice. Famous for being the trick shot quarterback on YouTube. But he can throw the football a little bit. I know you got to see him in there. What are your impressions of him? And yesterday we were asked whether or not we think we will see him under center at some point this year, and both Vic and I agreed that we will. What's your take on Tanny, and do you think we'll see him under center?
Yeah, you know, he can spin it. I mean, just watching, you know, you've watched enough quarterbacks. You stand there, I was 10 yards away from him, watch him throw the ball, and he can really spin it. Him and Whedon throw the same kind of ball, you know, and Whedon, that's not Whedon's problem. He throws a good ball, tight spiral, good velocity, and that's what Tanny showed. Not as big as originally thought. You know, the first report you see, 6'4". The Browns list him as 6'3". Maybe he's closer to 6'2". But he can throw it, and if he has any of the accuracy that you see in those trick shot videos, you think, okay, this guy deserves a chance. Put up huge numbers in Division III, so obviously he's had some production. My guess is we do see him, just because that's been the history. You know, we saw Thad Lewis in the last game last year. You know, we saw Bruce Gradkowski play, who hadn't been on the roster long. So it seems like when you're having a losing season, the players are out of the equation. You wind up getting to that third, fourth, fifth quarterback somehow by the last game. So obviously he won't be ready to contribute Sunday unless he's forced into action. But if they continue to lose and Jason Campbell's out for the last 5 weeks, it wouldn't shock me to see Tanny the last, you know, week 16 or week 17.
Yeah, me too. I think we're going to get to see a little bit of this guy. And I'm curious, too. I want to. I mean, I really want to, in light of what the season is right now. And if you're talking about maybe full evaluation, I want to see that. I know the personnel people here have some thoughts, and they brought him aboard. Even if they don't get to see him in action, they kind of know what's there. And then, you know, take it into the offseason, and you see what your quarterback mix is going to look like. From the defensive standpoint, and particularly from what we didn't see in the way of a pass rush against the Steelers, I thought that, too, was a reminder of how this team does get pressure, which is mostly through scheming and manufacturing them and good creative work by Ray Horton and that defensive coaching staff. And this wasn't one of their better outings in that regard. And I'm not taking too much away from the Steelers, but that was an offensive line that they should have been able to exploit.
No, you're exactly right. And the Steelers, you know, did their best to get the ball out of Ben's hands in a hurry. And the no huddle, I think, takes some steam out of the pass rush. But you have to win some of those one-on-one battles. And when they rush four, they did not get to Ben, period. And you need Mingo to win some of those one-on-one battles, and Kruger and Sheard, because obviously in this 3-4, that's where the pass rush needs to come from. And while the overall sack numbers are good, I don't think the pressure numbers have been good enough. And especially from those three spots, you know, Sheard had a little injury to deal with. But you'd like to see, Yeah, you just need to see more sack production from your outside linebackers in a 3-4 defense. It's as simple as that.
What's your take on Barkevious Mingo's rookie season at this point?
A little disappointing. You know, I don't know how much the bruised lung in the preseason took out of him, if it affected how quickly he started. But then, you know, he had a sack the first three games, so he said, okay, he's off and running. Haven't seen much of an impact after those first three sacks. I think he still struggles a little bit in the run game, although the coaches like his effort and like think his technique's getting better. It's just not the impact that you'd hope for. And, you know, a lot of pass rushers struggle when they're young. But then you see the guy like Alden Smith, who goes into San Francisco and blows it up, playing kind of a similar role as I think is at least I envisioned for Mingo. Come in on third down, go get the quarterback. That's all you have to worry about. And he hasn't done that. And part of that is because he had to play a bunch of downs when Sheard was hurt. So he's an every down player, and it takes away from just focusing on a pass rush. But if he doesn't get to, you know, let's say 7-8 sacks by the end of the season, I think it's a disappointment, which, and he's one of the things I'm looking forward to watch over the last five games. Do we see a light go on? Do we see a surge in sacks? Because I think that would make a lot of people feel better going into the offseason.
It would, and it should. And if you go to Pro Football Focus, where they have their pass rushing productivity measure, and of the 38 outside linebackers who have played 25% or more of their team snaps, remember, not every team plays a 3-4, so this is looking at just 3-4 outside backers. The best on the Browns is Jabal Sheard at 18th out of 38. Then you've got Paul Kruger at 31st out of 38, and Barkevious Mingo right now 34th out of 38 among those linebackers in terms of his pass rushing productivity. He actually has a disproportionate number of sacks relative to his overall pressures. So he really hasn't – he's fortunately gotten the job done early, but as we've seen, he's on this kind of sack drought, and he's really not getting the quarterback like you thought that he would after you saw those first few games.
Yeah, and according to those same – you know, I was looking at some of those same stats earlier today, the Browns rank really close to the bottom in all those categories except pressure from their secondary. That's the only place they rank near the top. If you ask D-line or linebacker pressures, they're not getting them.
No, and secondary pressure is part of what Ray Horton encourages and wants, and he's got guys like
can't
T.J.
count
Ward.
On that, though.
But you cannot build your sack pressure around that, or else your pass rush pressure around that, or else you're going to be in the situation this team was this past week. And by the way, the more you take those risks, the more you are going to get burned.
And take advantage. Right, you can give up the big plays. Yeah. Right, when you play with fire, you do get burned. And the teams that are most effective and have the most sustainable pass rushes and defenses are the ones that can get pressure with their front four.
Four guys.
Right. You can do that. You can always get to the quarterback, and you have everybody in coverage, and you're in a better position.
Yeah, and you can do it with a 3-4. I mean, look at Kansas City with Holly and Houston. That's how they get their pressure. You know, and the Browns haven't had that production from those three guys like we talked about.
No, and it's complementary. I mean, that is really the essence of why this thing needs to get – why you need to see better play from Paul Kruger, why you need to see better play from Barkevious Mingo. They can't be in these droughts that they've been. What's Kruger? It's two sacks. And for – I know for the – it's always going to be disproportionate for the investment. You're always going to overspend for a free agent, and I'm not shocked that his numbers aren't the kind of numbers that make you say, wow, that's consistent with what they paid for him. Right now, it's overwhelmingly the opposite of that, but so you need to see better than that. And I know there are other things he can do for the defense, but when you pay that kind of money for the guy, you need a difference maker. And Barkevious Mingo, sixth overall pick, has to be a consistent difference maker. And Jabal Sheard feeds off of all that. Desmond Bryant would feed off of all that. They're not feeding off of each other.
No, that's exactly right, and that's where all the resources have been spent. So when you look big picture, long term, what are they going to do to help this team that, you know, in the offseason? I can't see them addressing that spot. They got three guys that should be able to get their sacks and pressure from. So, you know, I think they'll maybe get a corner, maybe go safety, but you wouldn't think that the Browns would spend free agent money or a high draft pick on another outside linebacker to rush a quarterback because you've already got those three guys. So you just need those guys to perform better.
To perform at the level you are expecting them to. T.J. Ward yesterday did not back down from his comments that he made following the loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He also noted that the team has not reached out to him to try to start contract negotiations. What's your take on T.J. Ward's comments, number one? Number two, are you surprised that they haven't started those negotiations, and are you pretty confident that he is a priority for the Browns?
Well, you know, they came out of frustration, and I understand that. And TJ is one of the better guys at the media, and he wants to win, and he speaks his mind. So I don't have a huge problem with it. You know, he said that he brought up, well, the Browns defense isn't creating turnovers either. But I didn't hear him say that, and a lot of people didn't hear him say that. So I think if you include that in there, you know, okay, our offense is turning over, but we're also not creating turnovers. It has some balance. But I don't have a big problem with it. It's you know, it's after the game.
And it is a fact.
Right.
It is a factual statement.
Yeah. I mean, that contributed to the loss. It was a huge play in the, you know, huge factor in the loss. And he's frustrated, so I don't have a huge problem with that. As far as him re-signing him, you know, I know that they don't want to have a lot of open talks about it during the season. But he's one of those two guys you have to think, him and Alex Mack, do they franchise one? Do they try to get a deal done with both? To me, TJ's an above-average starter in this league, and when you have to fill other needs, it seems to make sense to bring him back. I'm just not convinced that, you know, the Browns are going to pay a premium for what he might be able to get on the open market.
Scott, appreciate the knowledge, the breakdown, and we wish you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, yes. Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
He is Scott Petrak from the Elyria Chronicle. Telegram, check out his great work there. We have got much more coming up. We're going to hear from T.J. Ward, that sound that Nathan Zagura just referenced from last night's Browns preview show. That's coming up and a lot more. Jerod Cherry in our second hour, our second and final hour of this show. Your calls, 216-578-0850. Want to hear from you as well. Vic and Nathan, ESPN 850 WKNR.